Hello and welcome to the Luke Miller Podcast. I'm glad that you're able to join with me today as we continue looking at our little mini-series on grace. It's been a chance where we've had to take a look at the prodigal son and a few other stories that really take a look at the scope of grace and what grace is. Everything from challenging ourselves to say, do we take that for granted? Or should we be showing some more grace to others? And the prodigal son is such a good story because there's such an interesting diversity in how each person in the story views grace. Last week, we took a look at the younger son. And the one who went away. And we saw right from the very beginning, and we are in Luke chapter 15 for those of you joining us today. And we see in chapter 15, there is that it lays out that immediately there is a son that believes that he was privileged. I mean, and this is setting that context is that picture of a son who not only feels that he is privileged and is owed something, but when his father has to give him one third of everything he owns and gives his inheritance to his son, he has to liquidate property. He has to get rid of property so that he can pay in actual money. And so you see that this is a whole lot more work for the father in all of this. And that's probably a good picture that sometimes we start to take grace for granted and God's grace for granted. And we see the journey of the son, but now we get to the father, right? And what that looks like in as the father sees his son and welcomes him back. And through that, there's some very interesting things that we see. The father brings his son back and welcomes him with open arms. And very much, this is an encounter with grace. And it gives us, I think, hope of tasting grace for ourselves and a reminder of what grace is. Because the father knew full well his son would be welcomed into the village or when he returned from failure if all depending on how the father would welcome him. That's why he threw his arms around him. That's why he threw his cloak on him, gave him his ring. And so those who were gathered at the city gates were able to see that this was a welcome. And this was something that was that the father wanted. And we can see that there's a few things in the father's welcome alone before we jump to the older son here, is that we see that in it there is forgiveness. In it there is a return of status by him having the robe. There is his authority is given back to him. His freedom is given back to him. Says that he gave his sandals, which was a sign of freedom, because back then only the servants or the slaves went barefoot. And then that feast and that sign of a joyful welcome, which was reserved for only special occasions. Now, verse 24 brings the first part of the story to a close with the wonderful words, "So they began to celebrate." And at the father's command, that party lasts for hours. But perhaps you also know about the older son who refused to join in on the celebration. And remember, this is actually very much the third telling of this story in many ways, although not with a son before, with a coin that was lost, and before that with one sheep that was lost. And here we have it as the son, so it's a lot more personal. And he represents the older son, all those right-thinking, right-living, rule-keeping people who want to see repentant sinners publicly punished to teach them a lesson. Just as the prodigal son still lives today, so does the unhappy older brother. And before we get too hard on this guy, I want us to think if we've ever thought that he's got a point, right? I mean, how come the father didn't do anything cool for the older brother, do anything great for the older son? And so I think that just as much as there is a bit of that prodigal son in us, there's at times a bit of that older son in us as well. And that's the lesson that we also want to take away from here in Grace. The older son is working in the field with the young when the younger son returns and does not get home until after the party has already started. And you know, there's something about hard work that seems to awaken the self-righteous attitude in us. There's something about putting forth effort that makes us look down on those who don't put in all the effort. In fact, 3 weeks ago, we saw that in our story of the workers in the field and how the master paid them the same amount, whether they worked for 12 hours, whether they worked for 6 or 9 or 3, or whether they were there just for the last hour. And all of a sudden, the workers are so indignant at the fact that they had worked for 12 hours, yet they were getting paid the same amount as the ones who had worked for 1 hour. There is something about hard work, right, that makes us sometimes look down on others around us who do not do the hard work. And I mean, I can see this just when we do yard work on Saturdays. I can see it from my own perspective when I feel like I've been out doing yard work and for 3 hours and I come inside and I see the kids on the TV or playing a video game. I'm like, come on, get outside and help me. And so I get one of them comes out. I get one of them out helping me do something and another one's doing another thing. And wouldn't you know it, one feels that their chore is harder than the other ones. And it immediately becomes unfair. And I say this because I think there is this unspoken reality that the older son in this story is a lot more relatable to a lot of us in not wanting to show that grace. So one of the servants tells him that his brother has come home and that the father is exceedingly happy about this. And this news is met with an immediate expression of jealousy and anger. He begins to sulk and he begins to pout. He refuses to go into the house. And when the father comes out to urge him to come in, all that pent-up inward rage comes boiling out. And the father's request is met with this flood of bitterness that's going on. And notice the emphasis on self in what the son says. He was angry and answered his father in verse 29. Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. In verse 30, but when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. I mean, can you hear the resentment and bitterness in this statement? And some of us today and this week stand in the shoes of that older brother. Perhaps it'd help to analyze this a bit so that we can see how closely we match up with this kind of self-righteous tendencies so that we don't allow it to creep into our lives. Because this is what it is very much about, this self-righteous son who thinks that he's never done anything wrong, who just has not, and maybe he has done, I'm sure he's done something wrong, but just not as bad as his younger brother. And one of the marks, and we see kind of some tendencies of us becoming self-righteous and not showing that grace. And that first mark of self-righteousness is a sense of being treated unfairly. And I know you're probably saying, well, it's unfair that you think it's unfair to be treated unfairly. But you see here, you never gave me a goat so that I could party with my friends. Notice it wasn't even about family for him. It was to party with his friends. He felt like he was ignored. He felt like he was forgotten. And this feeling of unfair treatment is always this initial mark of a self-centered attitude. It's a sign of a pride that has been crushed, of a wounded ego, revealing really the centrality and focus on our own selves. It's the most common expression. And as this story brings out the anger and this won't play attitude and it's not fair attitude, this attitude of I'm taking my ball and I'm going home if I can't play the way I want to play. And this is one of those tendencies of the self-righteous, of those who don't want to show grace, and or those who don't understand the full scope of grace. The second tendency is an overinflated view of self, I believe, as we look at this story. Notice how the older brother describes his own superiorities and advantages. The self-righteous is always full of self-praise. "Look, all these years I've been working so hard for you," the older brother said. And that's the older brother's perspective. He's just been contributing to his father, and he makes no recognition of how much his father has helped him or how much his father has taught him over the years. Again, even in that overinflated view of self, there's a complete focus of self-centeredness where it is, "I want to party with my friends," not, "Hey, Dad, how come we can't throw a family party for me?" He goes even further than that, says, I don't want anybody around. I want my friends around. But this picture of an overinflated view of self is one that can really consume us when we look down on others. In Isaiah, we see six different woes where Isaiah comes to Israel and says, "Woe to you, Israel, and here are the things that you're not doing right." And one of those is that greater than thou perspective. And I can tell you that when a survey was done with the Pew Report, this is a couple years ago now, or 4 or 5 years ago now, about how people view Christians, the number one thing that came across was self-righteous. Now, you got to take that with a bit of a grain of salt, but the reality is people kind of see that. And in a world where Christianity is supposed to be so much about grace, and I'm not discounting judgment or anything like that, and God is a righteous judge and all the other characteristics of God, but grace is something that we are very happy to accept, but not very happy sometimes to give. And that's kind of what we see in this story. "I never disobeyed your orders," is what the older son says. And I doubt that's a true statement. If you've got kids, you've surely heard, "I never do this. I've never done that before. And you never told me to do this." You ever heard that one? "You never told me to clean my room." And you're like, "What?" That's all I've been saying for the last 2 hours. So I doubt this is a true statement when he says, "And I've never disobeyed your orders." No one has ever lived up to that kind of standard. And it's remarkable how easy he can conveniently forget how many times his father has forgiven him over the years. His view of himself is that of being completely and totally right. And that tendency of that overinflated view of himself to combined with that sense of being treated unfairly is really what takes away that ability to have a more effective ministry. And so we can see again that there's a third tendency in this story is the blame of his father and the contempt for his brother. That phrase, those four words, this son of yours. And you can hear the contempt in those four words. He does not call him his brother, and there's no gladness or joy in his return. He rather views himself as something vile, and his brother is this vile, despicable person. And there's no love or respect for his father because of what the father has shown. And did you notice how the father ends up with all the blame? It's amazing how that happens. This is all your fault. "You never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate my friends, but when this son of yours who has squandered your property, you kill the fattened calf for him." Self-righteousness is one of the, I want to think of the world's most deadly sins. Jesus dealt with it more severely and more sharply than any other sin. He could be tender and gracious and accepting towards those who were involved in adultery or drunkenness. But when he faces a self-righteous Pharisee in their smugness, in their complacency, you hear his words burn, and they are very strong words. And this sin is deadly because it's so easily disguised as something justifiable. This is what is wrong with the self-righteous spirit. It can always be proved by the book to be right. And there is a sense in which this son can be justified for his attitude. But that is the mark of the self-righteous. And here, just like the Pharisees, and this is why this is hitting home to the Pharisees, there is this picture of Jesus telling the story and the Pharisees not liking it one bit, because to them, the older brother is fully justified. Yet to Jesus, there are some serious words for the older brother. A quote I came across this week as I was looking at this said that the American church is long on mad and short on grace. We're mad at politicians. We're mad at media. We're mad at the president. We're mad at family members. We're mad at this, that, and the other. We're also mad at those who live their lives differently than we do. And the message of the prodigal son is saying, let's stop being so angry with the people who sin. Lost people are going to sin because they are lost. And that is a reality. Christians are going to sin because they're not perfect. Non-Christians are going to sin because they are lost and they don't know. And I've said it before, but it's very important to repeat, is let's refuse to be angry with people who sin differently than we do. Because grace is a blanketed statement. The church that Jesus Christ wants it to be is something that is a place, a gathering place for forgiven sinners. There's that blanketed grace. The knowledge that we have in all of that is one thing or another, but there's the reality in it, is that the church itself is a gathering place for sinners. When we're self-righteous, when we think we're better than others, it's impossible to be gracious. We can't be givers of grace if we are constantly believing that we're superior to others. We need to remember that what we learned last week, when we really take a look at this, or 2 weeks ago, that we're equal to each other. We need to remember that there's a much bigger party going on than we think, than what is even just going on here. Are we going to join the party, or are we going to stay outside and criticize? And maybe today there's not much joy in your life because it's been a long time since you've come to that realization of and that scope of God's grace. And I hope that as we look through the last 2 weeks of the prodigal son, you're able to see just there is joy in that grace. And notice the contrast in the father's story. He says to him in verse 31 and 32, "My son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And let me just point out two characteristics of true fatherhood in this. First, the father comes out to meet the angry boy, just as he went out to meet the returning rebel. So he goes out and he seeks his son who is self-righteous, and just as he went out and the father sought the son who was rebelling. God the Father loves the self-righteous, the smug, the self-centered legalist, even as he loves the rebellious and the defiant. When the father finds the oldest son, he does not scold or berate or rebuke him harshly, just like he doesn't do that with the younger son, but rather he pleads with them. And the tense of this word indicates that the father invited his son again and again and again to come to the party. The father tells the son that everything he had was available to him. All he had to do was ask. And that self-righteous attitude frequently occurs in those who are sitting in the midst of great possibility but never claim it. They get upset when they see others whom they feel do not deserve anything coming in and getting what they should have had, but yet they never asked for it and they never claimed it. This reveals that the older son is actually more lost than the other one was in many ways. He too was in a distant country, a far country of the spirit, far removed from his father's heart. The father offers grace to the boy. Son, you were always with me, and all that is mine is yours. Now don't be angry because I have shown the love and grace to your brother. Jesus ends this story with the boy standing outside the house. And I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but we don't know what happens next. He's out there nursing his wounded ego. Whether he repents and goes in and joins the party or not, we don't know. The story itself is addressed to obviously the Pharisees and the scribes of Jesus' day who had the same spirit of the older brother. Jesus doesn't tell us what became of the two sons. He just leaves that cliffhanger of an ending. And I think he does that because he wants us to see ourselves in this story. Which one of the brothers most closely describes you today? Because we probably associate with one of them. And yet we have to ask ourselves, how can we change? Are we being rebellious in our ways? And do we need God's grace to be shown to us? Or are we being self-righteous in our ways and thinking we're better than others and have some of those tendencies we talked about, and we need a heart change and an attitude change? I think as we go from here, as we continue on this picture of grace, it is one because, you know, I look at this and the older brother who had to come face to face with, you know, a strong reality of what's going on. The father's message is there's enough grace for both of the sons. He's looking at the prodigals and he's looking at those who are proud. He welcomes those who are sorrowful. He welcomes those who are sinners who want to be forgiven. That's the attitude that the prodigal son had coming back of I'm not worthy. And it's the heart change that needed to happen in the older son as he said, this is unfair. So hopefully as we finish this particular story, we're able to find ourselves again in that place where we're asking, where am I in this story? And who do I associate in this story? And how do I maybe change my attitude? Or how do I return to God and see what that looks like for us? I'm going to end it there. I think that's a great place for us to end this week at the end of this story. But I do hope that you have enjoyed taking a look at kind of the other side of this story. Often so much focus is on that prodigal son and that relationship with his father. And taking a look at the older son today, we're able to get a bit more clarity of all of the people in this story and how that father should act and how we should act as Christ followers as well. So I will leave it at that, saying take care, have a great week, and we will be back next week taking a look more at grace as we go forward. Take care. We'll talk next week.